Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio and the Voice of Change. Thanks for joining us at our new time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Tonight it is my pleasure to have Peter Klein with me, and our program is called Getting Ready for the Coming Renaissance. And the coming renaissance
it's
certainly is coming. Our background music right now is William Florian, Time for a Change, and it certainly is time for a change.
Time for a change.
The Voice of Change, now known as the Voice of Change, Raising Our Children, Our Future, focuses on nurturing the physical, emotional, social, mental, and spiritual development of today's children. On these programs, I will have many guests. These featured guests will be involved with children, nurturing their body, their mind, and their soul, allowing their unique spirit to soar. Our children are our future. In addition, guests will share their thoughts, ideas, and insights about their personal journey as a teacher of these children. Sometimes they will talk about their journey of living, learning to live moment to moment, working with these children in new ways, making conscious choices, and thus living by choice, not chance. These are changing times. These times are asking us to live in greater harmony with ourselves, our children, as well as with the planet. Although there is much chaos taking place on the planet and in the lives of many, the potential for goodness, for healing and wholeness has never been greater. Today's children truly are unique. So many are so perceptive, intuitive, and have healing abilities. Some refer to them as indigo or crystal children. I don't believe we should label our children, but understand the traits that these labels refer to and nurture our children accordingly. This is a time to be open to new ideas, healing ways, and change. Our children are our future. So tonight, it is absolutely my delight to have Peter Klein. Peter Klein has been working in the field of education for decades. He founded his own school, which helped to change the lives of teenagers, for 36 years. He has trained teachers in public schools, colleges, corporations, and welfare-to-workforce programs in the United States, Canada, and several European countries. His main interest right now is raising the intelligence of the human species globally. By the end of this century, he believes that the average human will have an IQ of at least 200. Currently, he is working on a digitalized reading program that should enable people who can't read at all to learn to read at the college level in less than 1 year. During our radio program, he's going to address the economic transformation of the world because of the elimination of low-skilled jobs and the need for very highly intelligent workers. This requires, he feels, a global increase in intelligence that must be accompanied by spiritual rebirth and the understanding that love is the primary force in the universe. So it is my delight to have with us this evening Peter Klein. Welcome, Peter.
It's good to be with you, Sharon.
Oh, it's a delight to have you here. I'm really fascinated by your topic. I had not heard about any such program or any such trend previous to talking with you. So I really look forward to exploring these ideas. I'd like to begin with, if we could, with the your background. I mean, you have worked for 36 years with children, and can you tell us a little bit about your background in more detail, and then also about your new book?
All right. Well, let me start with the book because it leads into the background.
All right. Perfect.
In 1955, I was a junior at Amherst College, and I was reading at fourth grade level, and I was going out of my mind.
You were a junior?
A junior in college.
And reading at fourth grade level?
Yes.
Wow.
Then I was examined. The day before I was to go back to college, at the end of the summer, I was examined by an optometrist who said, you need eye exercises because you can't possibly do college work in this condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave me some eye exercises that I tried in college for one semester and then said, I'm coming home. And as I worked with him, it was like the curtain going up on the stage. I had been an avid reader as a child, but I had ruined my eyes. And as I restored them through these exercises, I had the experience of getting over feeling profoundly stupid. And I began to love to read and hungry for information where before I had pushed it away because I didn't understand it. Because one of the things that happens if you can't read is you can't also can't interpret what people say to you as well.
Sure.
So
sure.
The experience that I had was of being stupid and then becoming very intelligent and ultimately accepted in the top 1% of college-educated adults in reading.
Wow.
So I said
what
to myself,
change.
If I can do this, so can anybody else.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So my goal in life became to give this gift that had been given to me to all America school children.
Wow.
Now, what happened was that my mother was so impressed by what happened to all three of her sons with these eye exercises that she wrote an article about it, sent it to Harper's Magazine. They thought it was so good they wanted to serialize it in three subsequent issues.
Mm.
And so just to make sure after they were all ready to publish, they sent it to an expert who knew nothing about education or about children, who said it was baloney. So they dropped it, and she wrote to the Saturday Evening Post and told them exactly what had happened, and they said, well, we're not going to listen to that. Send us the article. They had it all set up to publish. And then Life Magazine came out with an article about how visual training was nonsense. And so they killed the article. The guy who wrote that article a month later published an article in favor of visual training. So you can see what kind of manipulation was going on here.
Oh, yes. And you know, that just happens in so many different areas today where the status quo, so to speak, finds ways of stopping the outpouring of this new information.
Well, yes. And I've had many, many experiences with that in all sorts of ways. But I'll stick to this one because we have a limited time.
Yes.
So I became very, very dedicated to visual training, and as time went on, I was looking for ways to introduce it into education, which led, first of all, to my becoming a teacher. I actually had wanted to go into theater, but when I got a job as a teacher to pay my way at the graduate school, I fell in love with teaching, and I just stayed with it. And I was in love with the fact that so many of my students wanted to learn, but I was heartstruck by the ones who had trouble.
Yes.
And so I kept telling parents, you should check this out, and after 6 years of this, one of them did. Now, this young man was in 10th grade. He couldn't read or write a complete sentence accurately, but he could diagram sentences.
Oh, my. That's unusual.
He had a lot of very nice qualities, but he was the victim of what happens in a multilingual family when two languages get mixed up and they just can't quite sort it out. So we worked with him with visual training, and he got much, much better. Now, it just happened that about 3 years ago, there was a class reunion, and I saw him for the first time in 45 years, and he was a very successful businessman in the best sense, and the people who worked with him talked of him as a genius.
That is so beautiful. What a beautiful story.
Well, this is, you see, I saw this as the answer to all the problems in education, and it really isn't. Everything doesn't boil down to one thing in that way, but what is true is that the human mind is a complex but can be approached in a number of different directions, and so the most recent thing that happened in this regard was that I was working with a company that was taking the ideas that were behind the eye exercises that I did and translating them into a computer game that you could use to learn cognitive skills. And this is called Brainware Safari, And we did several experiments with it in which we did before and after testing of cognitive skills using the Wilcox-Johnson, which is the best test instrument there is on this.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we found that we worked with a group of third and fourth graders in Indianapolis who'd been specially selected as being the worst in the entire city. And so mm-hmm. they had been segregated into this group of boys who had were at least three grade levels behind, and they had severe problems in discipline. And after 40 hours of this brainware, the average student there had gone up 6 years in cognitive skills.
6 years.
6 years.
Mm,
40 hours,
hours,
6 years. And they had changed from severely learning disabled to gifted and talented in 40 hours.
Mm.
Now, one bit of evidence of that was that they were taken, this is something you don't do with kids like that, they were taken to the Space Flight Center where, you know, very alert kids get to do a simulated Mars visit.
Yes.
So these kids come in, and they're halfway through the program. They've only done 20 hours of it. But the people who are running the program are amazed at how well they get into this program. They say, these can't be fourth and fifth graders. They're at least sixth and seventh grade.
Mm.
And that was the story. And so when we saw that, we said, every child in America, in fact, every child worldwide needs to do this program. Now, my belief in that was strengthened when I had three members of my own family do it. One was, he was 30 years old. He had had a wrestling career, and he had an infection in his spine, which had nothing to do with his wrestling, but it saved his life because he was in such good physical shape, but he could never wrestle again because of this. And so he went into construction, and he married his nurse, which was worked out very well.
Wow.
And then we were at a family reunion, and he said, you know, I'd like to get into the contracting business, but I have no idea how to do that. So I told him about brainware. And he did it. And then he went in and took a qualification test to join this contracting company, and he scored higher than anyone else ever had.
Oh, my goodness.
So they hired him provisionally.
Amazing.
They said, you can work for us for 2 months, and then we'll let you know if you have a permanent, 6 months, and then you'll know if you have a permanent job. In 2 months, they said, you're hired. You're one of the best we've ever seen. And they put him in charge of a $40 million project. He was the site director and making sure everything got where it was supposed to be.
Major changes in his life.
Absolutely. So then I have two stepsons. Now, I had three daughters who were superstars academically. I don't even need to talk about them. They never had a problem. But then I get two stepsons who are the exact opposite. They can't seem to handle school at all. And the oldest had to go to a school for special needs children, and he got a diploma, but it was kind of, we got you through, you know. And he was as allergic to school as anybody I've ever seen. And, you know, I ran a school for kids like this, but he was worse than any of them.
Wow.
But he happened to be a very good salesman. And so he was breaking all records at Sears, you know, and I figured someday he'd be a millionaire with his own electronics chain of stores or something. He came one day and he said, I'm tired of this. So I said, why don't you try brainware? Well, he loved computer games, so he did it. A year later, he applied to college, got accepted, fell in love with his textbook, his teacher, and the subject, got straight A's in everything, and now has Phi Beta Kappa.
Oh, what an amazing change for his life.
So, and one more, and then we're through.
Okay.
This was my youngest stepson who was socially just gifted. He could make friends with anybody in 3 minutes. But he wasn't good in school. In fact, he was so bad at college that he lost his scholarship freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
So then he did brainware. And now he has now graduated from college. every one of his professors wanted him to major in their subject because they thought he was so brilliant.
Mm,
he graduated as an art major, and they said, this is the best we've seen in years. And he immediately got his job photographing Notre Dame games. And he's launched on a career as an artist. So everybody that I've seen do this has turned their life around to an amazing extent. And this convinces me that we're looking at some, and this brainware is just in its infinite stages, because we could make it 50 times as effective as it is now with what we know. But look what it's doing, just in, you know, someday they'll say, well, that was just a, you know, very, very primitive thing.
Yes.
There was an experiment in Switzerland in which they used some kind of a program somewhat similar to that, about which I know very little, but I know what the results were. It was given to adults, and they had what amounted to 8 hours of actual use of the program, and they tested their IQs before and after. The average IQ went up 47 points.
47 points?
Yeah, that sounds like science fiction.
It does. And, you know, in this experience and then the other ones too, is this level of new level of capacity maintained long term?
That's a wonderful question. And actually, there was another research project in which they compared instructional programs that were done by a teacher with those done by a computer. And they found that those done by a computer, when tested 3 and 5 years later, held up as almost perfect retention of the material learned, whereas the instruction provided by a human being didn't do nearly that well, and that they had deep insight into it, as well as it wasn't just that they knew the answers, but they understood the answers and they could apply them. And, you know, in all the realms you were talking about, you know, the physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, they could apply them in all those ways. And that's what we see. We see people who go through this experience become very spiritual, among other things, but also very practical.
So fascinating. You know, the spiritual aspect is another one I want to get into. But before we go there, just the fact that these, you know, you've had significant changes in people's lives, and the fact that you're saying, you know, 5 years later, all the changes were maintained. Is there a reorganization of the brain that takes place during the use of these programs so that it's really literally changed in some way?
Absolutely. In fact, modern brain research, and there's been a lot of it, has contradicted virtually everything that was believed about the brain in the 20th century. And in the Switzerland experiment, what they said was, we only did 8 hours of it, and we found that the more time they had on it, the better they got, and we saw no place where this would stop. In other words, suppose we did it for 100 hours, might they go to 300 IQs? And if you look at Gerald Edelman's study of the brain, he's one of the top neurologists. I think he's a Nobel Prize winner, and he says that the capacity of the human brain is so great that it would have, if it, you know, if you could know everything that happens in the entire universe over a trillion years, that would be a small part of what the brain could do.
You know, I recall, you know, many years ago when I was a child in school, they were saying, the statistics we got, that, you know, the brain was only used 10 or 15% of its capability.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's very, very untrue on two grounds. Number one, you use all your brain because whatever storage space you have, you use. But, you know, I give the example that if you filled your house with reels of films from Hollywood and filled it, you know, totally full, and then you replaced them with DVDs, you could put them all in a closet. And that's an example of what I mean about the way that the brain stores information is all important. And as a result, we have all kinds of cases of people who seem to have absolutely unlimited memories, total recall. Toscanini is one example. He recalled every score that he ever looked at in his life. He recalled it perfectly. So the capacity of the brain to store information is literally unlimited. And so when you say 10 or 15%, no, it isn't. It doesn't even approach 1%. It's so far from 1% as to be laughable in terms of what it theoretically could store and do and accomplish.
Amazing. So I know there's more to this. The fact, you know, that you're demonstrating, or you have, you know, for our listeners, that there are many experiences where the brain can be altered and increased, the IQ, that's you know, you've stated it well. I know there's another reason you want to do this. You feel that all people, that the overall level of the intelligence level of people should be increased. Can we go down that path and say why this is so important?
Yes. Let me quote Ray Kurzweil, who's our best futurist. And Kurzweil says, and I quoted him in my book, he says, during the 21st century, we will progress, we will make as much progress as we made in the previous 20,000 years. Now,
yes,
what
we
that
definitely
says
are
is,
in a changing time right now, and I think that people are really, from all walks of life, are coming to understand that. So that's very significant.
Yeah, so that changes everything that you can conceive of, because you can't possibly predict many of these changes. And an example that I love to give is Isaac Asimov wrote the novel I, Robot back in the 50s, and if you read it today, it seems like it's from a museum. It's just old-fashioned because he missed computers completely.
Mm.
You know, and if you imagine what life would be like today without computers, it would be absolutely 100% different.
Yeah.
So what's the next thing like that that's going to come along? Now, if we're to deal with these very, very rapid increases in technology, which we barely tasted so far, we're going to have to be able to think on a much higher level. And I don't just mean intellectual. I mean spiritual, in the sense that we're going to have to empathize with our planet and give our planet what it needs so that we don't destroy it.
Definitely.
And a lot of that is intuitive. And the intuitive, as the IQ goes up, if you do it properly, the intuitive abilities increase too, right along with it. So
the intuitive abilities of someone doing these programs increases as well as the cognitive function.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons is the more you relax into a feeling that you just understand things, the more you're open to that level of the brain where you're receiving, you know, sort of below the threshold of consciousness, you're receiving
uh-huh.
all this information from the universe.
Uh-huh.
And you can begin to make, you know, people call it hunches. People in business say, I play a hunch. In fact, I'm working with somebody who said he decided to work with me on a hunch. It's working out very well, by the way. But the more that you're open to this wide range of information that you can tap into, the more you can actually sense the future. And, you know, there was a study done back in the 1930s where they studied dreams, and they evaluated them as to how they referred to real events. And they found, and they said within a 48-hour period before and after the dream, how did it refer to real events? And the dreams had as much of a tendency to foretell the future as to remember the past.
Mm.
And this would be silly things like somebody opens the refrigerator in a way that you saw in your dream. You know, a lot of deja vu is in that category.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Huh.
But I can tell one story about that affected my school very, very deeply. I started a school called Thornton Friends School, which was for 9th through 12th grade, and it was for people who wanted a different kind of school experience, not necessarily because they were failing, just because they wanted something different, that recognized that they were human beings. And so we put all the emphasis on, you're here to find out who you are, and we're here to help you do that. And we're going to teach you what you want to know. We're going to make sure that you know some really nifty things, but we're here to serve you. And this had an amazing effect on the students. Now, one of the things that they were doing, we had a week called intercession, and you could do a lot of different things. And one was that a group went in a school van on a trip of Skyline Drive. And one of the students, the night before they left for that trip, had a dream. in which he saw the van. The van had a blowout, and it went over up to the, there was a little wire sort of at the curve in the road to block it. It broke through the wire and rolled down the side of the mountain, and everybody was killed. So the next day, they're in the van. He's looking out the window, and he recognizes the scenery from his dream, and he yells out, "Slow down!" And the driver slowed from 55 to 35, and that's when the blowout occurred, and went right up to that wire and stopped.
Oh my.
And that's why we're having this conversation, because my career would have been ruined if that thing had happened.
Oh, my.
So there's, you see, we have become so materialistic and rationalistic, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's benefited us enormously to take account of reality in really rational ways. It's very important. But we've kind of ruled these things out as if they didn't exist, and there's just no evidence whatsoever that they don't exist.
Yes, yes. Well, I have a little question for you here that's a little challenging, because I come from a different perspective, and this is new to me. So I would just love your input here. I have read a lot about the Indigo Children, and I've actually worked with them, and I don't know if you're familiar, but they are the ones supposedly who have come in to break up the systems in the past. You know, I feel that I'm, you know, in my 60s, I'm a teacher of the Indigos, and there are Indigos that are in their 20s and 30s, and then there's Crystal Children coming in who really are able to take advantage of the system having been broken up by the Indigos. The Crystal Children are extremely loving, very intuitive, very in tune with the earth. They have just natural tendencies to love the planet. And then you know, there's these folks have been written books, Jan Toper and Lee Carroll, the Indigo Children, Doreen Virtue, the Crystal Children. And then there's another one out, P.M.H. Atwater, and she's written Beyond the Indigo Children. And so basically all of them are saying the children coming in are really here to support the transition that is taking place in the planet, and they naturally have these tendencies to be able to help. So I would just like, and I know you're familiar with this work too, so how do you put these two things together? Why is such a program that you're speaking about is necessary when the children coming in are addressing the changes already?
I think it bridges the gap.
Okay.
In other words, the more that you understand of the culture you're trying to change, the better you can change it.
Mm-hmm.
And because they really do see things from a different perspective, and I know what you're talking about. In fact, I think my younger stepson is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He's just amazing. One time he was like 8 years old, and he asked me something about are atoms like basketballs or something like that. And I said, no, actually they're not. And he said, well, don't tell me. He said, it's because they're so small they don't have any insides. Well, I had never thought about that, but it's probably true. I had a different answer, but I just stopped there and I said, okay, I accept that.
You know, that's so beautiful that you did that, because so many times, you know, they do come to the same conclusion, but from a different point of view. And so acknowledging that is so important.
Yeah, and I really believe in that, and that's how I taught in my school. I wanted to affirm the perspective of the student rather than override it. And so I would do my best to bring many different perspectives together in the classroom so they can communicate. And the better you understand who you're talking to, the better you can get your point across. And so the point of brainware is to give you greater self-confidence in dealing with the system that that you're in, so that you can excel within that system and still carry your own agenda of love, which I share and understand. I do everything I do from that perspective.
Yes, yes, I can hear that. So I'm not quite understanding this. So why were these children coming in with them coming in with already this makeup, that they're very aware of the transformation taking place? Why do you feel this is still necessary?
Because there is so much propaganda beating them down.
Mm.
The
so it gives you the confidence level, the confidence aspect of the program.
You see, when I was, I went through this myself because I felt like I was stupid because I wasn't in tune with the people around me. And, you know, I had trouble dealing with reality because I didn't perceive it very well, physical reality. And I couldn't put my ideas together very well. So by getting the, you know, one way of thinking about the spiritual is that the spirit inhabits the body, but they have to make up with each other. You know, they have to get along. And if the spirit hasn't really accepted the body, there can be a lot of conflict there.
Yes.
And as and you yourself gave the exact paradigm that our school taught on the basis of, you know, you start with the physical and you go all the way to the spiritual, but they have to get along together. And so whatever we can do to agree that what we're looking at, we're both seeing, you know, the same thing in a physical sense, you know.
This is so fascinating. So basically the program is much more than just a reading program. It is to enhance one's confidence level and also bring out the intuitive faculties and the spiritual components.
Yes, and one way I do that is I write nonsense, you know, sort of like Dr. Seuss, but not quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is this doesn't necessarily mean anything in particular, but it can be given meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So give it the meaning that you want to give it and go with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shakespeare's that way too.
Yes, yes.
Now
yes,
you have to,
sure.
I mean, you can't make up, you can't say that to be or not to be means it's about changing a tire or something. You have to take the words that are there and do something that makes sense with those words. But you can certainly give many different interpretations, and every actor who plays Hamlet gives a completely different interpretation of what this play is saying.
Yes.
And that's what life is. It can be interpreted many different ways. And what we're trying to do right now is transcend the culmination of the industrial age and the information age that we've been living through into an age of high spiritual awareness. But it has to be based on the physicality of the world that we live in. It can't just go sort of drifting off. But when it is informed with the spiritual depth that you're talking about, which I totally agree with and seek to encourage and honor in anyone, and it can also, and you know, some of the world's greatest geniuses have been profoundly spiritual.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it doesn't mean they can't know mathematics, that they can't build engines or whatever. It means
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it means that they have a larger view of what the human, what is the purpose of human existence on this planet, which is something that we are collectively creating, and we're finding our way into something really quite wonderful.
Yes, it sounds to me that the program is almost, I mean, it's amazingly, well, how do I say this? It is raising the level of consciousness.
Absolutely. Yeah, because if you can do math, analyze the aesthetic qualities of what you're looking at, interpret it spiritually, if you can do all that at the same time, the spiritual values are grounded in such a way that they have more impact.
I mean, this is revolutionary because, you know, people work in the spiritual realm for literally decades to grow in consciousness and to be enlightened. So, I mean, for a reading program that is really focused on reading to develop and to change the consciousness level and even take it to enlightenment, I mean, this is more than just a reading program.
Absolutely. And everything we teach is either, you know, let me just take Dick and Jane, which many people, that was the primer that I read when I learned to read. And
yes, me too.
All right. So what I get from Dick and Jane is that these are kids that aren't doing anything interesting, that are sort of supposed to be like me, but they're not really. And nothing happens in this story that has the slightest interest for me. The only purpose of the story is for me to practice words.
Yes.
And there's no reason why I can't start with my first sentence that I read being, I am, and then talk about what that means to me and hear what other people in the class say they think it means to them. You see the difference?
Yes, in a way, but are you saying then that these reading programs are going to have the same level of talking about I am, only from a computerized program?
No. What the computer does is it triggers the mind. It doesn't control the mind.
Okay.
So what, I mean...
okay, I can see how this, so it triggers the mind, and therefore it's doing something that is, you know, in the past has taken decades to develop, and it's triggering the mind in a way that it can speed up this process.
Yes. Now, let me explain one concept that is very, very powerful here that most people don't understand very well, and that is the feedback loop. And what a feedback loop is, that it tells you how you're doing. So when I reach out and pick up a glass of water, my eyes are guiding my muscles, and my eyes and my muscles are communicating in the brain to let me reach that glass of water and hold it.
Yes.
And that's a very few computer robots can do that sort of thing, and certainly
mm-hmm.
not anything
mm-hmm.
like the way that humans can do it. But humans do it naturally; they don't think about it. But that's because an infant in the nursery has lots and lots of practice with the physical reality that's right there in that nursery. But it doesn't have any practice with the things that aren't there. What the computer can do is greatly increase the number of interactive processes that the mind can experience, thereby giving it a much wider range of interactive perceptions, each of which enriches all the others.
Hmm. You know, I'm just, I have to ask you another question that is coming to mind here. This seems to be that there must be trial and error going on. And so, as within anything, there can be error and it can have a devastating effect. So, how has this programming been handled so that, you know, we aren't playing with minds in a devastating way?
Wonderful question. I love it. That is key. That's absolutely key. The computer is designed to keep you at a level. Let's say you're going to get 90% of your answers correct, or 70%, whatever is right for that particular personality.
Mm-hmm.
That means that your confidence is constantly building, but you're still being challenged, but you're not being devastatingly crushed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because what the computer does is gives you the next step when you're ready for it, rather than throw you in the middle of something that's way beyond you.
Okay. And that in itself is going to prevent the problems.
Yes. And one of the things that really annoys me about schools of education and the so-called science of education, which absolutely does not exist, is that they don't do what people in manufacturing do. If you build an automobile, and Toyota is learning this the hard way right now, but if you build an automobile, you've got to test every part of it to make sure that it works and that it will work over a long period of time. Well, what people do is they publish textbooks that are thrown together by somebody who supposedly majored in that college subject in some college, and they turn it loose on the kids without ever testing on anybody. The programs that we're doing will always be tested on so many people that we know exactly who's getting it and who isn't, and what adjustments we have to make so that a wide range of people whose different learning characteristics we can also test and tune it for
mm-hmm.
will get exactly what they need at the moment that they're getting it.
Oh.
Now, that can speed the rate of learning by several thousand times.
Yes. Yes, yes. And this, in your mind, is going to prevent a lot of mad scientists running around making things worse.
Well, yeah, because if you get... See, one of the most important things to understand in human experience, let's put it that way, is balance.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that we do, balance is a central concept in.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we have balanced diets, balance of powers in government, and on and on and on. You can't find a subject in which balance isn't important, and it's because we walk on two legs. See,
yes.
We are the one species that really has to master that, and so that's a major part of our concern. But it's also has everything to do with the spiritual versus the physical, and can they balance each other out in a perfectly appropriate way? And so as we give people a chance to learn math and then study literature and don't see them as completely separate, they start to balance out the one with the other. And the more different subjects that you bring into this, the more you are approximating what we call ecology. Because everything that happens in nature is balanced that can be studied by all the different sciences. If
yes.
you're strong on
yes.
physics and weak on biology, then there's a lot you miss. And so by giving people a basic sense of the balance structure of all these different subject areas, they then become able to put what they're thinking in perspective of what some other discipline would bring to it. And
fascinating.
And the spiritual realm is what integrates all of that.
Yes. Yes. What about the fact that most people believe that intelligence is inherited?
Well, it's absolutely false. There was never a bigger lie than that. And it was invented by the people who were trying to sterilize women. And they said these women are feeble-minded and they shouldn't reproduce because they'll have feeble-minded children, which is not necessarily true. And that became the basis of the Nazi. And literally, Hitler said, my mentor was one of those people. One of those Americans who came up with those theories about intelligence. Well, we now know that, yes, of course, DNA makes it possible for you to talk and walk and all those basic things, but your experiences, because the brain is so rich in its potential and can react to so many different kinds of things, your experiences are what is the basis of your intelligence. And if we give people experiences that are very carefully choreographed, so that it gives them a rich blend of the many different areas that modern life is composed of, so that when they go into a situation, they will feel comfortable with it and recognize how to deal with it and what they need to do about it. That's the gift that the computer gives us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the intelligence that must be created by experience. And for one thing, if IQ were inherited, then nobody would be able to drive a car. Because we simply wouldn't have inherited the skills that enable you to drive a car. And there's a science fiction story about this. You know, somebody says we're going to make automobiles, and the other person says everybody will be killed. Everybody in the world will be killed.
Mm.
Well, when I drive a car, I feel like it's part of my body. Well, how is that possible? I don't have billions of years of genetics to tell me this machine that I get into can be an extension of my body. That's not part of early life on this planet. It's something that the brain is able to adapt to because it can pick up anything that it encounters and it can assess it, become familiar with it, and feel at home with it. So that whole thing about IQ being inherited is total garbage.
Yes, yes, it sounds.
And you take any kid out of the inner city who is has an IQ of 70 and will turn him into a genius.
Amazing. You also speak about the importance of this taking place because so many of the low-skill jobs are being replaced and more intelligent workers are needed. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I hear people complaining on on talk shows, chemists and biologists, all these people are doing research and they say, well, we can't do the research we want to because A, we don't have enough money, and B, we don't have enough intelligent people that we can find to do this work. Well, if you can raise an IQ of 47 points in 8 hours, you can take somebody who would have been, you know, working on cleaning streets and turn them into a first-class surgeon in no time, you know, potentially. Now, of course, they still have to go through all that it takes to be a surgeon, but we can... If we speed the rate of learning up very significantly, they can learn that quickly, too.
It sounds like it almost is science fiction. What has been taking place? Is Brainware the main program doing this today? Or
if you go out to buy something right now, that's the best thing you can buy.
Uh-huh.
10 years from now, there will be 50 of them.
Wow.
But right now, this will do more for you than anything else that's in any way comparable that you can get.
So it's Brainware.
It's called Brainware Safari.
Safari, uh-huh.
The reason is it has a kind of a safari theme to it, and there's other things out there that are called Brainware. So if you call it Brainware Safari, you can Google it.
So, you know, there's so much going on in the planet right now, and, you know, we have challenges with the environment and the homelessness and just so many things. Do you feel that these are going to be handled in the future? What is your take on the world problems today?
I think the world problems can be very easily solved just by improving education, because you saw when Haiti happened, how many people rushed in there to try to help. Now, that's a very small percentage of the total population, but as people get more and more intelligence and skill,
yes,
and they feel humane. I mean, a lot of doctors went down there to Haiti very, very quickly. If we had 20 times as many doctors in the world, a lot of people who've been languishing all over the world would be getting attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is a problem. I think that, first of all, what business doesn't realize is that the best investment in the world today is a human being. If you take one human being and raise their capacity, let's say that you have somebody whose lifetime income would add up to $50,000, and you give them the skills that enable them to earn, say, $5 million. Now, the reason for the difference, if it's fair, and I admit it isn't always fair, but if it's fair, the person who earns the $5 million is contributing a great deal more to and putting more wealth into the system, and that wealth can very well be that they're saving people's lives by doing open heart surgery,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is. And the point is, if you do it in such a way that along with that intelligence comes a deep wisdom and insight, because you're giving a balance instead of drilling people to the point where they're practically tortured to death, and that's how they make it through medical school and, you know,
yeah.
They're barely hanging in there with their inner psyche, which is what happens in a lot of places now. And you balance that out with a total human perspective, you're going to have some wonderful things happening. And most of these problems are very easy to solve if people just get in there and solve them. You know, we don't have to do what we're doing in Congress right now. We could easily solve all that. But because of the level of distress and lack of insight and low intelligence that's in the mix there, that's why we're having these problems. And that'd be okay if we were still, you know, in the agricultural stage. But as all of this power that we have through technology comes into play, we have to have people who have the wisdom to use it wisely.
Yes, of course. So are you a lone spirit in this work, or are you connected with others who see this as something that is very important? How does it fit into the whole there, Peter?
I am building I am building a group of fellow travelers who are going to band together. We have yet to get a single school, but I think we're very, very close right now. In fact, we may have quite a number of schools that we will be able to get, and we want to take all of the different, and there are probably 25 things that aren't as good as Brainware, but they're very, very good, that you could put together in a school, including different techniques that teachers can learn. And we believe that we can demonstrate to the world that the kids going to that school will turn out to be, you know, looking for a conversation with Leonardo da Vinci or, you know, that kind of thing.
So how do you go about, well, it's almost like getting, you know, I mean, what is the process that you're thinking about of, you know, approaching schools and getting them on board with such a thing? Because, I mean, this is a huge change. This would be a huge changing day for the school systems.
Well, thank you, George W. Bush. You made the schools so concerned about test scores that if I come along and I say I can raise those scores and I can actually do it, that's what they're concerned with, but in the meantime,
that's the only thing they're concerned with. That's true, right?
So I think we're going to have a lot of takers once we get enough credibility established and we worked out the negotiation process and so on. But I have a lot of very brilliant people working with me now and getting more every day. And my attitude is extremely eclectic. If you're good, I want to work with you. And I love meeting people who have yet another thing that they can contribute to the learning process. In fact, a very good friend of mine just a couple of days ago introduced me to his way of preparing people to deal with change. And this is focused on when your parents get old and you have to, you know, deal with that. How do you deal with it in such a way that it becomes a success for everybody involved? It's just a wonderful program. And, you know, there's probably thousands of things like that that people are going to come up with. Yeah. Every one of them makes a contribution to the quality of life.
So it seems to me that you're saying there's going to be a variety of programs on a variety of levels, on a variety of subjects to really work with all people and all aspects of this process.
Absolutely. I'm not, all I care about in relation to a program is how good is it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't care who did it, but I want to get the very best things. And 99.9% of the stuff out there is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't understand that education is not about browbeating people. It's about inspiring. It's about wooing them into falling in love with a particular thing that, you know, whether it's physics or what.
Yeah.
And I can tell a story. There was, when I was in first grade, a parent came in and talked for an hour about astronomy, and I fell in love with it at that point, and it's still powering me right this minute.
Yes. Inspiration is wonderful. Why do you believe that the schools haven't been using many effective educational methods that you're telling us about right now, and where did these schools go wrong?
Well, they're bureaucracies, and the structure of the school is not set up so that there's any value to the system in caring about the children. It's all about other things. And so what we have to do is change that perspective and say your primary goal is to give that each child everything that that child needs.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that we have on our side is we have tremendous capacity to measure things, which means if somebody has a reading program or somebody has fainting spells or whatever it is, we will find out and we will make sure that that child gets what that child needs. And the schools haven't had that in the past. And when we do that well, everybody will get what they need and they'll fall in love with school, and we'll train the teachers to teach in such a way that the students just don't want to go home at the end of the day. And
so you will be
that.
Also working with teachers to change the way things are.
Yeah. I've had tremendous success with that. The teachers love it.
Well, you certainly have had the experience to... you know, from your background and your years in education to, you know, to work something like this out.
Well, you know, every aspect of this is exciting to me.
Yes. So, Peter, if people are interested in knowing more about this or contacting you, do you have a website or a way of them getting a hold of you?
Well, I'll give you my email address, and they can email me.
All right, fine.
It's Peter Lee Kline, LeeKline, @AOL.com.
Okay, that's Peter, P-E-T-E-R.
Lee, L-E-E.
Uh-huh.
K-L-I-N-E, it's all one word, @AOL.com.
Excellent. So Peter Lee, L-E-E, Kline, K-L-I-N-E, @AOL.com. Excellent. Well, we have just about another minute to wrap this up. Is there anything you'd like to share that you haven't touched on? It's a fascinating subject, and I'm just delighted that you were, you know, able to bring it to us today.
I would like to say that the greatest teachers I've ever had have been the students that couldn't do something. Because I want to know why.
Yes.
And I think every teacher needs to look at it that way.
Oh, that's beautiful. 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 Well, thank you for a fascinating hour. I'm just really amazed at this new way of looking at things, and I look forward to hearing more about what you're doing in the future.
Well, Sharon, I'll be happy to send you a copy of my book if you're interested.
All right. Do you have this out now?
I just finished writing it today. I'll email it to you.
Oh, fantastic. I would love to read it.
I'd love to get any comments you might have.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Peter, very much. I really appreciate your time, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much. Great
talking.
Okay.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
My guest has been Peter Klein today, and his email, he can be reached at Peter Lee Klein, PeterLeeKline, at AOL.com. And this has been talking about ways that the coming renaissance and how the intelligent level and the consciousness of children and adults can be changed. I want to let you know about future programs. We have three authors coming up in the future. The week of March 16th, we have Janine Fox, and she's going to be talking about feeding Penny Pig. She's a financial planner, and she works with children to get them to fall in love with saving. And it sounds like a fascinating story. Then we have Mark Alden Johnson the week of April 20th, and his new book is I'm Up in a Tree. And he is the author and father of three children, and he introduces readers to a little boy who's stuck in a tree. And the boy, unsure of what to do, must rely on his own judgment to figure out how to get back to the ground, despite the temptation to listen to misguided advice of others. So that'll be a fabulous story. And then the other one we have coming up is Rima Coral, and she has written How Little Eddie Learns to Read. And she is an author and PBS television host and celebrated author. And she encourages parents to step in and help their children with reading concepts even before they enter school. And so she has the time to share with us, too. So we have those authors coming up. We also have Jeffrey John returning. He is an outdoor educator and works with children. His program is postponed into April because his CD is not quite ready, and he's going to be finishing up that before he comes to speak with us. I also want to let you know that I have some things on my website, free downloads. There is one, The Art of Listening to Young Children. I am very involved with infants and young children, wanting to have them be able to be listened to at a very early age. And so I have a free download right now. When it gets actually finished, it will be in a book form. And the website is www.sharonannwykoff.com. It's SharonannWikoff. I also have a new class coming up, Understanding Today's Children. The date's not been decided, but it will be an overview of the indigo children, crystal, psychic, and also the special needs children, and the role that each of these plays on the earth here at Change Times. I also want to say that I have an ongoing parent class that is always complimentary for 2010. The one coming up next is going to be Learning and Growing with Children. It is based on the book Connection Parenting by Pam Leo. So thank you for listening so much to the Voice of Change, Raising Our Children, Our Future. And I hope you'll listen next time, next Thursday. And so tune in 5 o'clock, our new time. Thanks for listening.
It's time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change. It's time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change. We've got politicians, lawyers, and bankers ruling our lives. Without the corporations lining their pockets, they could never survive. How much bleeding and deceiving will it take until we're finally fed up? We replace all these businessmen with diplomats who won't be corrupt. It's time for a change. Time for a change. Time for a change.